studying in the Sunday school hour on being led of God. I won't get a chance this morning to get to what I had planned, the next phase in the follow-up, because there's another area in being led of God that I want to introduce. We've had three problems in the assembly recently, and these are individual problems, small problems, and not some big problems that affected the whole assembly like we've had in the past. But they point up the necessity of understanding the principles of God. They point up the necessities of knowing how to be led of God. So far, we have dealt probably more with how not to be led of God than we have to be led of God. But as we said before, it's a little easier to show people how not to be. And that's a very practical thing because it often hits right home and keeps them clear of that area. And if you know what not to do, it's easier to then know what to do because you know to avoid this is not the path. And that takes out a whole realm that so many have lived in and been in confusion. And it would be a great help just to avoid some things. You know, I have found that one of the big things that have caused problems in this assembly over and over again in a thousand little different ways is just lack of perspectives. Being new in the way, lacking perspectives, then the new convert who loves Jesus, he finds that he violates principles. And how many know when you violate principles, you always get into trouble? You always do. You cannot violate principles without getting into trouble. Lacking perspective, they violate principles, and they run into the ditch. Having loved God, they give occasion to the flesh, allow the enemy of the soul to come in, and to push him off into a ditch someplace because they violate principles. So this morning, I would like you to open your minds and hearts real wide, hang on every word, and hide this in your heart so that when these difficulties come up, you might remember these things and take the right path and avoid difficulties. Now, we have over and over again explained a good many things that people forget. You see, what happens is you explain these things as a, they're kind of like a church principle. And you explain them out here up in the ALC, and everybody's head goes this way. They can see it. It looks good. But then, when they get in the midst of a detailed, individual, personal problem, somehow they fail to apply this that's been given. Because it's up here someplace, and it's out of sight, out of mind. But if that had really been digested into all the cells of the mind and the heart, then when you're in the midst of trouble, difficulties come your way, you would have that inside of you, you would know what to do, you would know the principles, and you'd say, now, wait a minute, what are we to do? Anytime something happens, stop. Stop. Because the flesh is fast. How many know the flesh is fast? The fastest gun alive. The tongue goes a mile a minute. And oftentimes the tongue is going without even getting the brain in gear. It's just going high speed. And the devil is right there to bring anger, to bring words you shouldn't say, to bring action. But the first thing is, like God said, stop. And know that I am God. Stop. Slow down. Wait. Don't rush so fast. You're getting ahead of the Spirit. Just stop. Say, Lord, what would you have me to do? What are the principles? Whom should I go to if I don't know the principles? Just if we would just stop when problems hit us and not carry on in momentum after the flesh, not after the way that we used to go. So many people have lived so long in the flesh that when they're confronted with something, they don't know anything else than to let this go back and quickly grab a hold of the old pattern and go with that. That's how you used to handle problems, is get in the flesh about it. So we get in the flesh like we used to do. But we are not of the flesh. And although we are in the flesh, and that's where the difficulty comes. That's why it's so important when something comes up in front of us is we not haul off and do something. Because you do it in the flesh. But stop. Wait. Contemplate a moment. And say, Lord, now what are the principles? What are the principles? What would you have me to do? What have I been taught? What are the ways? What will happen if I go this way or this way? If we'll just be slower about getting ourselves in motion, I think we'll save ourselves and a lot of others a lot of hurt, don't you? Problem number one. A particular person in the assembly had a disagreement with another person over a business matter. And to both of them, they both had their side, and it involves money that neither one felt they could lose. And neither one, both looking at it from their own perspective, and how many know that people look at things from your own perspective, looking at it from their side, it seemed like they both thought they were right. Now, what they did is, they couldn't agree, and so once the person who didn't get money refunded, who thought they should have, they were stuck, in other words, because the money was not on the table in front of them. One person had it, and they thought this person should give it back, and it should give it, and they should thought it should not give it. That person made the mistake of getting in the flesh. They did not follow the perspectives that were taught. Now, this person has done really well in the Lord lately. They used to have lots of problems in the past, but they've done real well. I've been very proud of this person. But all of a sudden, they didn't know what to do. They thought they were right. Failing the perspectives, the proper principles, they went over to a relative of this person and berated the person before the relative, which is a horrible thing to do. And then caused problems there. And then they went to another brother in the Lord, and told them the story. And that brother made the mistake of becoming a jury or a judge who's only heard one side of the story. How many know you should never form opinions when you hear one side of a story? How many know that? How many do it anyway? Yeah. It's so easy to do. I mean, it doesn't take any practice or any effort to do it. It takes effort. It takes all the wisdom you can muster not to do it. Because when they stand there eye to eye and they tell you what happened, there's a great tendency to believe them. Tremendous tendency to believe that's what happened. But you haven't heard the other side. And people that are disturbed have ways of sometimes magnifying things and leaving out little parts. That just make a lot of difference. Never form a conclusion when you hear one side. I mean, never. Day by day, and you're doing life, they come up and tell you the story, what happened, so forth. If it's negative about somebody else, form no conclusion unless and until you hear the other side. You'd be much smarter if you did that. There are lots of people going around and have conclusions about people and things that are absolutely wrong because they haven't heard the other side. There are people that have been upset at me for doing things and they had no idea what really went on. Because they never heard my side, they only heard the other side. They're upset at some elder, they never heard what really happened. And I've heard these stories. I got into an elder body and said, no, that doesn't happen at all. What really happened? I told the person, now this is what happened. They laid it out. It didn't happen that way at all. They forgot to tell you this, besides this and this and this and the other thing. And it wasn't said in that way. But sometimes people take something in a certain way, that's the way they want to take it. So they went and told this person, and that person made the mistake of setting himself up as a judge to arbitrate the situation. So he went back to the house of the first person who allegedly wronged the second party and bawled that person out. Because it wasn't his task. He wasn't set in that position at all. And then the first party was in confusion because they thought they had done what was right, and now another person had come and said, no, you're wrong. And then to compound the confusion, another person came along who heard the person who had been berated as being wrong and said, no, you're right. So one said you're right, one said you're wrong, and here they are, see, sitting in the confusion's belt, and the other person then wants to get upset and leave the church over a few paltry dollars. Now this is beneath, this is far beneath true Christianity, mature Christianity. Such things should not be. Mistakes made all along the way. That should never have come, never have happened. Now, what should have been done? What should have been done? When two parties have any business or church disagreement among yourselves, you can't come to a conclusion on a matter. What should have been done? Let's suppose some trivial thing. Let's suppose that you carry, supposing you're both going to take some money someplace. The person says, well, I don't have any good place to keep it. You keep my money for you.
me.
So you give him your $50, and they carry your $50 plus their own $50, went on a trip with say, and they lose it. Now the first party says you should pay me back my $50, because you lost my money. The second party said, well, if I had the burden of having to carry your money, and so if I lose my money and yours both, and I have to pay you back, well then I incur an extra risk by carrying your money. I don't think I should have to pay it. I did my best with it. Now they both got the point. Neither one of them want to lose the money. What should be done? What should be done? What's the way? Should he go off and ask some other brother, what do you think should be done? He said, well, I think she should. Well, what do you think? Oh, no, I think he should. He said, she goes back and forth, go on just getting a poll. Is that what you do? What do you do about the matter? Well, there's two steps. The second one is mandatory. The first one is not mandatory, but it would sure be good if you could do it. Step number one. First of all, the two parties should say, they should say one to another, well, now, let's don't forget one thing at the outset. We're both Christians. We're both sisters in the Lord. And we love each other. And above all, we don't want to break our spiritual relationships. We don't want anything to come between us and hurt our spiritual relationship and a good feeling one toward another. That's first of all. Now, we have a disagreement here, and the money's important to both of us. And somehow, hopefully, we'll come to some agreement here that we'll both be satisfied with. So I don't know how yet, but we need to seek the Lord on the matter. First of all, though, let's don't get in the flesh. Let's keep in the spirit. It's much sweeter that way. Let's don't break our spiritual relationships. Let's don't get anybody get mad and leave the church, let the devil take advantage of us. So let's pray and see if God will guide us in the matter. And let's pray to ask the Lord to help us keep out of the flesh and keep a good spiritual relationship. How many think that would be a good idea? How many don't? How many don't know? How many didn't vote? Okay. Now, let's suppose after they pray about it, and they both agree they want to keep the spiritual fellowship and find an answer, they still don't know what the answer is. Then they should stop and say, well, if we don't know the answer, who is best to go to find the answer? If I am 2 years old in the Lord, should I go to somebody else that's 2 years old in the Lord? Well, should I go to somebody who's 3 years old in the Lord? See? Maybe 3.5 years old in the Lord. What provision has the church set up? What church has God set up in the church for this? What they should say is, well, since you and I don't know the answer to the solution, and we both have a point, and it's important to both of us, and we don't want to hurt ourselves spiritually, and we don't know the answer, let's go to the elders and find out from them. Let's seek wisdom from them and see if they can give us some counsel. How many think that would be a good idea? That'd be better than going to one another, wouldn't it? Now, step number two, therefore, then, is go to the elders. In other words, if you're already in the flesh so much that you can't pray with one another and all this, you should say, well, okay, let's go to the elders about the matter. That's what has to be done. Now, what should the elders do? Well, what the elders should do, whether it's one elder or whether it's more than one, and most cases can be handled by one elder. This case was so simple that any one of the elders could have handled it by himself without any trouble whatsoever, in my judgment. Only complicated cases that involve difficult perspectives and certain opinions, varying opinions should have a collection of elders. And hopefully the elders will have enough understanding themselves that when a person brings them a very difficult question that they know is a matter, could be a matter of opinion. It's not a set thing. And that they might have one opinion, but the other elders might not agree, then they, instead of saying, you should do so-and-so, they should call then and get a collective opinion of all the elders, maybe, and even the pastor, all together, if it's a complex thing, and they know that it's not a set. But they're all things that they know. There are principles, they're so clear, you don't need to call anybody else in. It's too clear. It's too manifest. The way is too plain. And they can handle that by themselves. What they should say is, now, you two that have come here, I want you, first of all, to understand that God has set in the church elders to take care of these matters and counselors. It would be good, perhaps, if they would read, they might even want to read 1 Corinthians chapter 1, chapter 6 to them, the first portion, and explain it. Now, I think before I get into that, and I will, basically it teaches you that there are those in the church that should be appointed to take care of these matters, and elders have been appointed. Then they would say, now, if you would go out to a court of law, which 1 Corinthians 6, 1 and 2 forbids you to do as Christians, brother to brother, if you went out to a court of law, you would agree by whatever that judge said, whether you wanted to or not. You would agree. And whatever he said was to be done, you would agree. Now, would you agree that if God has called the spiritual elders, and he says he has, and that he would give them wisdom, and particularly in counseling, and that's what this is, would you agree that after I, having listened to both of your cases, knowing that I am for justice, not for any one person over another, that if I, in my own mind, say it's a clear-cut case, I need no other counsel from any other elders, and I give a decision, will you both promise before God that you will happily abide by that decision, that there will be no further murmuring or complaining, that there will be no complaining against me nor against one another, that you'll say, all right, I take it as of the Lord, knowing that I may be wrong. I may be looking at it a little bit too close and too selfishly. I take it as of the Lord, and I'll abide by it happily. How many say, now, would you do that? And having them pray together and come to that decision, you are now, the stage is set for hearing the problem and rendering decision. And they both agreed to abide by it. And often, most often they will do that because they both are sure it's going to go their way. And they think they're right. But they should, but need to be explained that you both couldn't possibly be right. And therefore, you may be wrong. We just accept it as of the Lord. Most of them will. And this matter could have been handled very well, easily. And there would be no hard feelings, no relatives drug in, no other brother drug in to set himself against another sister in the Lord, and no other sisters against the other brother, and nobody wanting to quit the church and all the rest of things, see. And it was a paltry sum anyway. Now, there are cases in which a person might feel, on rare occasions, they might say, well, I have a problem that is really deep and very complex. And I want to, and this happens sometimes, and it in no way is depreciating the elders and their wisdom. I believe God has given the elders wisdom. I believe he's promised it to them. I believe because of the situation, he's given them wisdom above their years in counseling with people. And that isn't to say that all counseling is perfect, but I believe that they have. And I believe that they can handle the majority of problems that come to them. But there may be some problems that a person feels in their own heart, right or wrong. They may feel, well, I want somebody who's been away a long time. I want somebody who thoroughly knows all the perspectives of the Scriptures. I want somebody who I can be really make sure. I'm not so sure that maybe our elders, as good as they are, perhaps haven't maybe dealt with these areas before and are complex. And sometimes that happens. All right? What should you do? Well, the best thing, because of our situation for right now, in the future, is really not to come to the pastor. Now, this is where most of them want to come. They say, well, you've been away a bit longer. And I have people come to me and say that. Well, that's normally a good thing to do. But in this case, with my many avenues of service and already being overloaded, and remember the case with Moses? Well, he just had so many coming his way, he couldn't take it any longer. And God had him appoint 70 elders. I feel like we do have another elder that isn't being used quite so much because of the lack of proximity or lack of closeness to the area, who has had a lot of experience. He's walked away a long time. He's been a minister of the gospel and pastoring. He's been an evangelist. He's been a Bible teacher for years. He knows the principles of the word. He's got love in his heart for the flock, and God has given him great wisdom and understanding in the years past in counseling. And that's Russ Barnett. He lives in Tacoma. But if you've got a problem big enough, that's a 20-30 minute drive, won't hurt you. Never, don't go over there without calling up and making an appointment, however. Now, last year, that wouldn't have been a good way to go because he was overloaded in Bible college. He was already had a strain greater than he could bear. And he had the most difficult classes of anybody to teach and develop. But since he's no longer pursuing that area, and until such a time as he wishes to be dropped from the eldership, and he hasn't stated this, he is an elder of this church. And I don't think you should be taking all your little baby problems to him. We have elders that are right here that are close at hand. That's the job. But when you have problems that you feel have got real sticky difficulties in them, and you need somebody that you feel like you need to, somebody who's walked this way a long time in the difficult areas, I think it'd be all right for you to give them a call, make an appointment. Now, let's look at 1 Corinthians 6:1. Dare any of you, having a matter against another, go to law before the unjust and not before the saints? Now, let me tell you what that does not mean. That does not mean that Christians are not allowed to go to law court. What it means is that Christians are not allowed to go to law courts in a dispute with another Christian in the same assembly or in the same fellowship. It's very wrong. It does not mean that a Christian does not have a right to take a lawsuit matter with a non-Christian to law court. Neither is it wrong. Neither does it violate any principles of the Word of God. Because God has put His blessing and stamp of approval on the government. And there is a law court, just like they had a court in Israel, there's a court out in the land. And many of these courts, some courts, now there will be some courts out in the land that you might go to with the advice of the elders of the church. It might be two brothers in the church that are big businessmen involving corporation problems that they themselves can't handle. And it may not be a matter of feud or wrong spirit at all, but it's big corporation legal problems that are sticky. And the elders may listen and make sure they pray together and say, all right, now, brothers, be sure that whatever you do, you both agree to abide by the decision of the corporate judges, and you go in the right spirit and love one another and get them, be sure that they're on that right chain. And then they might have them go out. And as a matter of fact, they may both agree to make a statement before the court that as Christian brethren of the same church, they love one another, there's no animosity, they're going to abide by what the judge says happily, and this is not a dispute of personalities, it's only a sticky legal problem, and they want everybody to know that they're going to keep right on hugging each other all through the rest of life. And that frame, it does not give any bad appearance out to the world of brother fighting brother before the unjust. But normally, there's no reason to go down and have an unjust judge, which most of them are, not entirely unjust in everything they do. Most of them, I think, probably do seek to find who's right and wrong. But when your heart is when you're not born again and you do not have the wisdom of God and the light, you cannot properly be in the same position as when you're led of God. And if you have a disagreement over apartments or furniture or contracts, there's no reason why you can't come before the elders of the church who know God and who can seek the wisdom of God and counsel with you. And you, after all, you can abide by their decision, you can abide by their decision. And they know the principles, and they can deal with you on a spiritual basis as well and make sure that everything is kept right up. And so Paul says, dare any of you having a matter against another go to law before the unjust and not before the saints? This should be before the elders. Or if it becomes a big enough problem, the elders might have it brought before the entire congregation. Do you not know that the saints shall judge the world? We are slated to judge the world. And if the world shall be judged by you, are you unworthy to judge the smallest matters? Little dinky problems, he's saying. You Corinthians, you newly spirit-filled people, are running off to the Greek and Roman, the Roman law courts in Greece. You're running out to the law courts and the civil magistrates of the Greeks, or in some cases, maybe the Romans, at least if they're a Roman citizen. Otherwise, which most of them weren't, otherwise, before the courts, when Rome ruled, and let them judge little dinky matters, pay them a sum of money, and then abide by the decision. And it's free at the church. You've got people who are filled with the Spirit and know God and give unto better judgments. Know ye not that we shall judge angels? How much more things that pertain unto this life? If then ye have judgments of things pertaining to this life, set then the judge who are the least esteemed in the church. Now, what he doesn't mean by this, and there's been a lot of misunderstanding of this verse, and I looked in a good many commentaries, there's about five or six different opinions, and most of them are manifestly wrong. Some are right, I'm sure. What he doesn't mean is find the weakest, most ignorant person in the whole church. Find the one who's least esteemed, he has more problems, spiritual problems, and he's mentally retarded, and set him up to be the judge. Now, that's not what he's saying, obviously. It wouldn't make a bit of sense. And what he's not saying, and some have rendered it, see, the Greek can be rendered either you do it or do it. Is this what you do? Or you do it. We rendered either way. I think the Authorized Version is right, as we have it here. Some would have it, you set the weakest ones up in the church, the less esteemed. But and then they're coming on and saying, so these unjust judges and magistrates and so forth, they're the least esteemed in the church. Say, being unsaved. That can't possibly be. They're not in the church. The context is about the saints going before the unjust rather than going before the just. The problem with these type of scholars is that they look out at their church world today where they get all kinds of unsaved people in the church, and they assume, they transfer that back to the first century and assume the church is back like that with all kinds of unsaved people in it, like they got in their churches. The church did not have any have the unsaved in it. They were not a part of the church. The church are the called out ones, born by the Spirit of God, made sons of God. You see, didn't any unsaved people come in? They came into the assembly, but they were not part of the assembly. They were not a part of the called out ones. They were not a part of the church. You're not a part of the church because you sit in the church, in the church building. The church is not the building. The church are the called out ones. It's the church is the people, not the building. And you can't be a part of the church unless you're born again. Unless you become a son of God. Part of this called out number. And he was not talking about unjust people, the least esteemed in the church. What he is saying here is that if you are going to judge angels and judge the world, and we have set in the church elders and those to judge spiritual matters and larger problems, if then you have these little trivial matters, the smallest matters, he calls them, and you go to law, he says, you shouldn't do that. You should bring them before the church. The church should be in good enough shape that you should be able to appoint in the church, not from the highest members of the church who deal with important matters and spiritual matters. These are little simple trivial matters of everyday life that doesn't take a great deal of spiritual understanding and perspectives. And you should be able to take those, the least esteemed, instead of the most esteemed. Don't put everything to the highest echelon. And we should be appointing people in the church, saints who know God, filled with the Spirit, and seek His wisdom, and to set them as judge over them. A lot rather take the least esteemed in the church rather than the most esteemed out in the world who do not know God and are unjust. He didn't mean the weakest member, but as a class of the greater esteem or the least esteem. In other words, you're having problems about apartment rents and so forth. If your eldership is bogged down with all the big problems and all the spiritual problems, you don't need that kind of a powerhouse to take care of little problems like that. We get all kinds of people further down that have enough wisdom and understanding to be able to be appointed as lesser judges to take care of those matters. You don't give everything to the Supreme Court. Some things go to the Circuit Court of Appeals, and some go to the State Supreme Court, and some go to the local civil courts, and some go to the even to the justice courts and the small claims courts. And that's what he's saying. And then he says, I speak to your shame. Is it so that there's not a wise man among you? Don't you have any wise men that you have to send people out? No, not one that is able to judge between his brethren? But brother goeth to law with brother, and that before the unbelievers. Now therefore there is utterly hetema, or fault, between you. Or this word hetema, or fault, means it involves running into a loss is what it involves. Coming short of a victory or coming short of your duty. It means that you're coming short of your Christian life. You're coming short of the victory. You're coming short of what you need. You're coming short of what you should be doing. You're falling short of what you should be expected of you as a Christian. Therefore, translated, a fault among you. Why do you not rather take wrong? See, now one of these two could have said, well, I'll take wrong. Why do you not rather suffer yourselves to be defrauded? Now, a lot better than going to somebody and reading them out in the flesh and quitting the church, a lot better to be defrauded. A lot better to say, well, all right, brother, I think I'm right, but since we can't agree, I'm not going to let this separate us. I would rather lose a few dollars than break up our fellowship and friendship. But let animosity come in, leave the church. I'd rather turn the other cheek. Now, I know... I'd rather turn the other cheek. Now, I know that you're not doing this maliciously. I don't accuse you of doing anything. I know you're doing the best you can. It's important to you. One of us has to give. And I don't really want to take it before the elders. And I feel a bit ashamed to do it. I'll give. I'll give in. See, now, you may wish to compromise and give half. And I may wish to compromise. But if not, I'll give it all. Now, you know that you'll have bought more treasures on the other side than what you could buy. And the pounds of hamburgers you'll soon eat up, but you buy without what you've got right there. I didn't say steak. All right, problem number two. So let's remember that. Let's don't anymore be going to somebody else and telling them, that brother or sister, I'm talking mainly about, you know, college age now particularly, but it applies to everybody. Don't go telling them that they'll save 3 or 4 years and you'll save 2 or 3 years. Don't go tell them the problems and have them go ball out that, because they're not in a position to be bawling them out. They're not in that position at all. All right, next problem. Pre-marriage concerns. Now, the problem is this. And, of course, these are local, individual problems. These aren't sweeping problems across the assembly, but these are where we learn by these things. I hope no one will take offense at these. I'm not giving any names or anything. The problem is that unmarried babes in the Lord, that is just a year or two old, are going to married babes in the Lord for advice. Because they have a theory that because they're married, they understand all these perspectives. Not so. Not so. Because you're married doesn't mean you understand. Now let's get the picture. Here you are, ignorant about all these things, say, about love and marriage, pre-marriage relationships and what you should do and problems and is it love or isn't it love and should I keep going with them and all this. So you're ignorant about it and you wrestle through the problem. You're going through all these up and downs and confusion. You finally get each other down to the altar and you both say, I do, and you rush off on your honeymoon. Now, as soon as you sign the contract, you understand these things. Clear as a bell. So what happens? When does the knowledge come? When you sign the paper? Or when you rush out to the honeymoon, or after you get home, when does all the knowledge come in? Being married doesn't mean that all of a sudden you're the epitome of wisdom on the subject. It takes years to watch people go through all these ups and downs and clouds and difficulties. It takes the wisdom and understanding of God and the principles and the knowledge of God. And so there are a lot of babes giving babes advice. And what's happening is that you're usurping the job of the elders, number one. Two, you're adding confusion to the flock. Three, you're steering people's lives wrongly. Let me give you a few scriptures. James 3:1. This is a problem I'd like to see come to a halt. Because you're getting advice in the wrong place. And there's so much wrong advice being given. They give it with all integrity, with all goodness. And it's not their fault precisely. It is their fault. But the person comes and asks them. So they do the best they can. They try to help them out. And this is what I think. And they feel conviction about it. And so they tell them. And it's an innocent thing. It just turns out that they don't know what they're talking about. And the blind is still in the blind. See? And they had enough trouble. They wandered in the ditch long enough. They had enough trouble getting where they were. And they don't understand the case yet, really. Everybody's not to say, well, what happened to me, therefore, must happen to everybody. In the first case, they don't even know what happened to them. They wrongly have judged their own feelings and what has happened to them. And then they pass it off to somebody else who maybe has a different situation. Now, James 3:1 says, "My brethren, be not many masters." Now, that word in Greek means schoolmaster or master of learning. In other words, it means teachers. In fact, it's didaskalos, which every Greek student knows means is teacher. When you say didaskalos, you say teachers. And when you talk about the pastors and teachers, it's didaskalos, teachers. Masters means teachers. But since in England, when they translate this, they call the schoolmaster, master so-and-so, headmaster, they rendered it master. Now, be not many teachers, knowing that we shall receive the greater condemnation or judgment of the matter, as Revised Version says. Now, first of all, if you do this, you're setting yourself up to be many teachers. Every saint, married teacher, becomes a teacher. But you are responsible for the advice you give and the lives that you send out to the off to run shipwreck on the shoals. Number one. Number two, 1 Corinthians 12, verse 17. 1 Corinthians 12, 17. Give you a moment to find it. It's about the body ministry and our part in the body. If the whole body were an eye, where were the hearing? If the whole were hearing, where were the smelling? Now, he goes down and applies this to a lot of things. You can take any part of the body or any ministry and you can read that in, can't you? You can say if everyone was a foot, if everyone was an ankle, if everyone was a back, or you can take it out of the physical and put it into the application. If everybody were a teacher, if everybody were a prophet, if everybody were this, if everybody were that, where were the other parts of the body? So let's take that. If the whole body were counselors, see, are we all counselors? All married people are married counselors, is that right? See? No, we're not all counselors. God hasn't given everybody's not a mind, everybody's not a mouth. And some people who are spiritual backs and spiritual arms and spiritual hands are trying to be spiritual mouths and spiritual minds, and they're out of their element. Romans chapter 12, starting with verse 3. See how fast you can get there. Romans 12, 3. My time's getting away from me. "For I say, through the grace given unto me, to every man that is among you," and by man, that's generic. That means man and woman, anthropos. "Not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think." So first of all, don't think of yourself more highly than you ought to think. Don't think that you know when you don't, just because you have a feeling, because you have a theory. But to think soberly, according as God has dealt to every man the measure of faith. "For as we have many members in one body, and all the members have not the same office," we're not all counselors, "so we, being many, are one body in Christ, and everyone members one of another. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, whether prophecy, let us prophesy." He didn't say whether prophecy, let us counsel. No, whether prophecy, let us prophesy. If your gift is prophecy, then prophesy. If it's speaking in tongues, speak in tongues. If it's counseling, then counsel. But don't confuse it. According to the proportion of faith. If yours is healing, don't counsel. If it's prophecy, don't counsel. If it's speaking in tongues, interpretation of tongues, don't counsel. That isn't your job. Make sure you're a counselor. Make sure your gift is singing before you sing for the whole body. See. Make sure that whatever your job is, you're in the job, and we have more confusion because ears are trying to become feet, and elbows are trying to become knees, and arms are trying to become back, and everybody's trying to become something different than they are, you see. So be well that you operate by the function that has been assigned to you. Yes. Yes, a person may have more than one gift or one ministry at the same time. Yes, but I mean if you are limited to this, if you have been put in the position of ministry of counseling and of prophecy, well then use each one of those in the area as God is leading you, but do not do something that you have not been given that position. Do not get uphill on a testimony time and exhort the people unless God has set you in a place where you have understanding in the Word and the perspectives and principles, so that you're in a proper position to exhort. New babes exhorting older brothers and sisters in the Lord is not reasonable. It doesn't make sense for the little four-year-old to gather 8, 9, and 10-year-old brothers and 16 and 15 high school brothers around him and he to exhort them. It doesn't make sense, even though he thinks he's got something. Make sure that you're in that position before you exhort. And make sure that you teach before you teach your teacher. That shouldn't be too difficult. But also remember this part of it. Verse 9. Let love be without dissimulation. That is, without hypocrisy. Abhor that which is evil. Cleave to that which is good. Be kindly affectionate one to another, with brotherly love and honor, preferring one another. So make sure that you do that part of it, no matter what gift you have. All right, now, let's talk about these wrong perspectives for a moment. Now, I don't know who said what, so don't be embarrassed. But anyone who is out of line, even if you're out of line with all good motive and all good heart, even though you didn't mean to be out of line, still must be prepared for correction. Now, these are some of the wrong perspectives that have come to my ears, that people who do know a little bit about some of these things have been concerned by hearing some of the people giving wrong understanding. First of all, there's a theory abroad that because God is love, that all love that they feel in the marriage relationship in any form is of God, and that all problems they encounter are of Satan. But that's not true. One person in a marriage class, and this really floors me, but I was teaching a pre-marriage class. One person was amazed, just brand new, just came in, I think maybe even that day or two. They were amazed to find out that people who are not Christians could fall in love. I said, you know, atheists fall in love, you know that. Communists fall in love who hate God. Isn't that God gives them the love, you know, God reaches down and gives him love, that communist love for that communist. That isn't what happens. God has set up individuals with a full soul, with understanding, and so forth. Now, what is love? Love is an evaluation made toward an object or a person. You love ice cream, you love the taste, you love the color of those flowers, you love people. It's an evaluation made of the estimate of that object. You love them because they're kind, because they're sweet, because they do nice, because they have integrity, because they are loving people, because. You love that because of some value, some worth that you see. You don't decide to, it's an estimate given. Now, God didn't come down and give you that estimate for flowers, and that estimate for ice cream, and that estimate for people. People are still plain Calvinists. They were God just doing this with their hand down out of heaven, giving to people. We've got to get out of that perspective. God has set you up with intelligence and you are making value judgments. Little babies love that and they don't want that. Just like that. God didn't give them this and Satan gave them this. No. They have values and you've got flesh. Every problem is not demon-oriented. Remember, you've got yourself. Don't escape yourself and the responsibility of self. Now, they say, well, the first time I came together, I just knew we were going to get married. God put it in my heart that we were going to get married. But then things didn't work out too well. We had disagreements, and we were a little bit incompatible in ways and so forth, and love started going down. So we broke up. So then they evaluate that this way. Satan was contesting us. See, they didn't even know what was happening to them. What happened is they got together and they had infatuation. And all of a sudden, their heart exploded and their head was in the clouds and their feet were dancing along. It's called infatuation. Love takes time to build. They were highly infatuated. Bells were ringing and butterflies were flying and bluebirds were doing loops in the heart, see? And so they felt, this is the one I want. This is my man. I will, of course we're going to get married. God did not put that in your mind and say, my daughter, you are, this is the one to marry. That's the way they interpret it. That's not what happened. The heart was just doing loose. They were infatuated. Then they found out they were real people, and they had individual differences and difficulties. And so as they began to discuss them, they found out they weren't completely compatible in all areas. And as they discussed them, these became problems for each other and all the other things in life. And they found that infatuation has a way of dying down. Then they found out this, and so they come to the conclusion, the devil's contesting me in this thing. And what they assumed to be a fact. The devil's not contesting them at all. The average person in high school and college goes with several people and has a, and at first it's tremendously exciting, but it finally dies out. It just doesn't have this love that carries them on into marriage. They go to somebody else so they find out what their heart needs. It's a very natural thing. It happens in atheist countries all the time. It's not a battle of God and Satan. You just need to know, you're willing to learn one another and know where you are in this matter. And so then they say to the person who's wide-eyed and hadn't got married yet, listen to all their wisdom, they're saying, and stay with me a minute, that, well, we finally, you know, as we grew, well, this love started to build in the hearts. And they said, well, now, we started to end up getting back together, and we got our problems worked out, and we prayed together, and we worked together, and we began to change, and love built, and finally we got married. So, don't go on feeding. The person says, well, I don't feel like I'm loving him anymore like I used to. Now, what should I do? Should I break up or not? Don't go on feeding, sister. Go on fact. What fact? Go on fact. Well, now, what really happened is that because they had a great affection for the person, they let a few little things get in the way and stumble them, they did miss them, so they did get back together again because their hearts wanted to. And they prayed about these matters, and some of them were petty things, some of them were flesh things, and they worked them out, and as they kept going together, love began to build. And as love built, they began to want each other again, and they got things straightened out, and they did change. They became willing to consider the other person and so forth. Love built, and they did get married. But they had a wild idea that God put it here and Satan can test them. Therefore, don't go by feeling, go by fact. Well, now, love brings feelings unless you're confused in some area or something. Now, don't anybody get upset because I'm bringing this. I'm trying to teach. Now, if you've been a part of this, don't get upset. Because I'm not trying to hurt anybody. I'm trying to help. But if I can't tell anybody, it'll go on and go on and go on. Now, if we get embarrassed in life, well, I mean, part of, you know, correction does embarrass. But have you ever heard of dying to self? Sometimes we have to. Look at children. You're always telling children, you know, they have, children get embarrassed a million times a day. We have to learn a little bit. Let's be a little bit tolerant. So don't, please don't anybody take offense at me for bringing these things. I want to help this assembly. So, so they say continue by faith. But see, that can be very damaging. That person's in confusion. He doesn't know what to do. He doesn't know whether to go on or to break up or what he should do. I mean, he finds, I've had a number of people come over to me and say, you know, our lives are just kind of falling apart. The person doesn't want to be with me anymore. And now what? Now, let me tell you real briefly as I quit. Let me tell you what I tell people that come to me and say, what should I do? I probe a little bit, ask questions. They don't even know how they feel out of them. Do you love the person? Well, I don't know. And they don't know. I say, well, would you miss him if you didn't see him anymore? Or would you be jealous if somebody else started to go with him and so forth? And this and that and the other thing. And you know, I used to tell them, I say, well, your biggest problem is that you're getting all in a dither about something that you do not need to get in a dither about. Your heart will find its own way. Love is something that is so powerful that if you leave it alone, it'll build at its own steam. And when it builds up to a place where you want each other more than anything in life, you're going to do it anyway, no matter what anybody says. When you know you love each other, and you'll know it. You'll know. I don't believe in this love when you don't know it. Go on by faith. Love knows. Amen. Love knows. You like this? You know whether you like it or not. You know whether you like those flowers. You know whether you like that taste. And you know whether you like that person. And when it builds so much that you think the most wonderful person on earth, and you want to spend your whole life with them, you know it. You don't need all kinds of advice from all kinds of people. And if you don't even want to be with them half the time, that ought to be indicative of something. So I tell people this. Look, you can, if you try to be in love with somebody, artificially trying to be in love, you're making a mistake. Always trying to romance, I say you're in an artificial position. Or if you try to break up because some little problem, you may let some fear standing in your way and you are in love. Let some fear get in your way. The best thing to do is relax. I told the men, I said, now look, why do you dare to go in the first place? Because you want to be with them. And I said, if you feel like being with them, date them. If you don't feel like being with them, don't. Don't artificially do anything. Don't artificially do anything. Just, you need to just tell the person you need to find out where your heart is. So relax and get rid of all the fears and all the inhibitions. And don't worry about marriage. You're not even ready for that. Just keep it on a brother-sister level. You need to know where your heart is. You need to understand one another. And you feel like being together and fellowshipping, walking in the park, buying the soda, do it. If you don't feel like it, don't feel crowded. You have no obligation. Just be what you are and you'll level out and you'll find out where your heart is. You'll either grow into love or it'll die in the vine, in which case they'll get the picture and they'll begin to die with them when it dies with you, and it'll just die in its most painless way to take care of the problem. A lot of people feel like if we're not really going for good, I have to cut it off right today. That's not true. All you're doing is just being brothers and sisters, friendship in the Lord. Carry your friendship on until it builds to a grand height, into a love relationship and marriage, or until you just don't have no interest anymore, and so you move out and find someone else that maybe your heart is interested in. That's the way to handle those things. It's a very natural thing. It takes care of itself. And not the devil's contesting me and God gave me all this. See, you're introducing all kinds. I've got to either love or I've got to break today and let that person flounder and worry. And you don't have to do all that. That's all out of artificial things that are making the problems a lot bigger than they really are. Chevy, olive color, blocking someone in. MBP697, please move your car. And check with the usher at the back, so if they don't see you, they'll try to find someplace else to give this information. MPB697, please do not park any place that would block any other automobile. Thank you. God bless you. We'll continue this in another area next week. I think these things are good for our admonition. Please, when anyone take offense, but please do follow the principles given. Seek advice, not of one another, but of those that are counselors and been placed there in the bodies.